We're going to talk to Chris Perkins now. We're going to switch gears, talk a little football. Football has been very, very good to me. So I will be Orlando Escuela today. That's an old reference for some of you out there. Only a couple of you probably got that Orlando Escuela thing, because it's usually Chico. Let's talk to Chris Perkins. He does an excellent job for The Athletic, covering the Miami Dolphins on a daily basis. You can follow him on Twitter, at Chris Perk. Let's bring him aboard. Perk, how you doing, my man? You doing all right?
Big O, I'm doing good, man. All is good because there is some actual interest in a Dolphins game this week, man.
Yeah, that's what I've been talking about, how funny how things have turned, right? There was this hope for Manny Diaz that he's going to turn the program around. He's inspiring everybody. Then, meanwhile, we're looking at the Dolphins, roster's depleted, new coach. Oh, it's another apple that falls from the rotten Belichick tree. Can't expect anything. 5 weeks in, the Canes can't win a game now. They look so dysfunctional. The Dolphins are actually gotten better every single week, to the point that now, instead of 0-16, people are thinking that they actually have a shot this week. It's really amazing how one side has turned one way and all the other side here in Davie has turned the other way, and there is actually some positive air this week. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is, man. If you watch sports long enough, even just from week to week, not even year to year,
right,
stuff turns so fast that you're just like, what in the world just happened here? That's what we got in town. That's exactly what we got in town. I didn't think it was going to turn like this, mostly because of the hurricane. I thought they were going to be a little bit more consistent, although, if I'm not mistaken, I kept saying last year that it's more the defense. Everybody kept saying, well, it's the quarterback and it's even the punter. And that defense, if I'm not mistaken, they allowed 150 rushing yards per game in ACC games. And now you've got Manny Diaz taking over, and you see what the defense is. So, you know, that's the way it goes.
No, I'm with you there. Now, you look at did we really have to come out and say that Josh Rosen's a starter for the rest of the year? That was kind of like the known. Why did we have to go there? I'm just wondering.
Because before, every time Flores talked about the quarterback, he said, for now. For now. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick for now. It's Josh Rosen for now. You figured when the change was made that it was permanent, but it was just kind of a let's get this on the record type thing. And so that's what happened. And look, I'll tell you, Bigo, I wrote today that I really think that Josh Rosen is a likable guy. I'm pulling for him. I was very skeptical at the start because during training camp and early in the season, he kept saying, I'm not competing against Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm just trying to get better every day. And when I first heard that, I was like, yeah, you better wake up. You are competing against Fitzpatrick. But as I listened and he stayed on message, I was like, okay, now I get it. That's not just something to say. That's actually who he is. And he does have some depth to him, and he's got a sense of humor. He's got some awareness. He's crude, of course, because they're drafting a quarterback in the first round, right? The kid is crude. But I kind of like him because he's been in a bad situation in two spots now, and that makes me kind of pull for him. Even though there's almost no way he's your starter for this team next year.
And I'll give you something else, Perk. All the stuff that they talked about him, I have yet to see it. I don't see any of that. I see
I agree 100%.
I see what seems like a pretty good dude. He plays with moxie. He fights to the end of every play. He's gotten better every week. And I was just talking about this before you came on the air. Everybody's, talking about Kershaw this, Kershaw that. He failed here, failed there. I walked away last night with so much respect for him because of the way he handled the adversity in the press conference at the end of the game. I thought that was so enormous because you and I have been in many locker rooms, and we've seen plenty of guys that don't know how to handle the worst moments in their career, and he was amazing. And that's why I go over to Rosen again, because you just talked about it at the beginning of this interview. He's had two terrible situations. I don't see him point fingers. I don't see him blame anybody else. I just see him shut his mouth up and try to do the best he can week in and week out. I got nothing but respect for Josh Rosen.
Yeah, you know what? And one thing that he said yesterday, Big O, that really made me know that this guy is aware of what's going on, is he said, "I don't get into the politics of football anymore." And that told me he understood what was going on with this tank job and the rebuild and the Dolphins fans at least wanting Tua. That's the politics of football, right? That you're trying to sell hope to these fans. You're trying to sell tickets. You're trying to get the best quarterback you can. There's nothing that Josh Rosen can do about that. That's the politics. That's the owner. That's the GM. That's these people. He knows that he's kind of screwed, for lack of a better term, but I thought that showed great awareness. And he also referenced, his comment, and he referenced this with a smile, that he doesn't get into the politics of football ever since he made the statement that there were 9 mistakes in front of him. And you remember he was drafted number 10, and he said there were 9 mistakes in front of me. But I thought that showed maturity, growth, awareness, a lot of things that, you know, we heard that Josh was an entitled rich kid who never had to fight for anything in his life. He's had to fight for this starting job with Ryan Fitzpatrick and everything like that, and I think he's done a pretty good job. I will say this also, Big O, I don't think that Flores likes Josh Rosen, and every time he mentions Rosen, there's some kind of little needle about something that he does wrong. It happened again yesterday where he was announcing him as the starter, and then Flores says, "I wish he would get rid of the ball and not take as many sacks, but we'll work on that." And I was just like, "Dude,
wait a minute, Perk. I disagree with you on this. I think he's just being a hard ass, and hard asses ride you no matter what, every single moment, because they care, because they want you to get better, because they believe in you." And all of that. It's not really because he doesn't, I don't believe it's that he doesn't like Rosen. I just think he doesn't want Rosen to ever get comfortable because he's too young to get comfortable. If let's say it works out and he becomes the guy, 5 years from now, you'll never hear those kind of things from Flores because he's earned his stripes and he's there. I think he's just ball busting right now. And I think he's just keeping the youngster in check, and he wants him to know that he is going to, be on top of him for everything until he crosses that threshold that says, okay, you've earned it, that kind of stuff.
Well, I understand, but I don't hear him nitpick as much with Christian Wilkins, Michael Dieter, Mike Gesicki, Xavier Howard, Bobby McCain, Ryan Fitzpatrick. You go through guys at all positions, of all ages, and they don't get the needle as
he thoroughly embarrassed Christian Wilkins in front of everybody. He hasn't done that to Josh Rosen. He got Christian Wilkins and ripped him a new one coming off the field when he slammed the guy. He's never even done that. And then after, in the press conference with you guys, he goes, "I do that because I care about the kid. I want him to succeed." And then he, because he's going to ride him. I think he's just old school, man. I think he's like my dad. I think he's like my coaches that I grew up with, the ones that the millennials can't handle nowadays. That's all it is.
Right.
I mean, I had a PE coach that used to say, "You damn Cubans, go over there and sit by the tree." It was just one of those deals.
Right.
And I knew he was just being a hard ass. It wasn't really that he was a bad dude. It was just he was kind of twisted in the way he did things.
Wilkins and Flo have an interesting relationship because they give crap to each other. There's a back and forth there now. The penalty was a serious, Flores was serious about that. But they kind of go back and forth with each other. I just haven't seen Flo give a whole lot of serious credit to Rosen, where there wasn't some kind of addendum attached to it, some kind of, but he needs to get better at this. That's all. And look, this isn't Flores' quarterback, so I understand, but I really don't think that he likes him. I think that he probably thinks that he was forced on him, and, he's just going to kind of make the best of it. They'll have a new quarterback next year. But I don't think that he hates him, but I don't think that he likes him. I don't think he sees any much of a starting future with him.
How's the challenge been for you to cover this? to ask about all of this stuff every single day, that it's usually never positive. It's really, I mean, you were talking about all the noise that Josh Rosen has to deal with and how he puts it away, yet it was your question, because I heard the press conference yesterday when you asked him about, your job isn't necessarily yeah. secure in here. You know, they might be drafting a guy next year. How do you handle all of that? You know what I mean? So you got to do all those kind of things. How? See, that's the thing, Perk. People, I've done your job, so people don't realize. Yep. They just think that you guys are just being jerks, but it's not that. It's just you have no choice. That's all there is to talk about. How brutal has that been?
It's been rough, Owen. Yeah, I know I've seen you in locker rooms for the Heat and for the Dolphins for many years, and you've been with bad teams and good teams. The big challenge for me with this team right now, is there's not a whole lot positive going on. And usually when you're a quarter of the way into the season, there's some rookie that is playing better than you thought, or there's some undrafted free agent who has come out of nowhere and he's surprising people, or some unit is playing better than you thought, and there's really none of that. You know, Preston Williams has done okay. I say that Christian Wilkins, and I might have said this before when I was on with you, it's kind of tough to tell with him to me, because he's gone up against two probable Hall of Famers, right? And right guard Marshall Yanda from the Ravens, and then a right guard Zach Martin from Dallas. So he's had a kind of a rough start. Dieter has been so-so, but nobody has really stood out as, yeah, this guy is off to a hot start and I can see good stuff, or this unit is off to a hot start. It's been pretty, Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't play well. He was up and down. Josh Rosen, Devontae Parker, we've been down that road before, right? Albert Wilson has barely been on the field, and you just keep going down the list, and there's just not a whole lot of positive, uplifting things to ask about. Heck, even Jason Sanders is 4 of 7 on field goal attempts, right? So that's been the big thing. And that's, there's a lot of fun to be had, and there are a lot of interesting things. Like, look, I was just in there talking to Isaiah Prince, right, the rookie right tackle for the Dolphins. He came from Ohio State, and I was just talking to him about it. I walked up, and I was like, so how good is Chase Young? You know, the defensive end who's going to be the number one or two pick of the draft. And he was like, oh, that dude is serious. I was like, compare him to the Bosa's. And he was like, well, I blocked all three. I blocked Joey, I blocked Nick, and I blocked Chase Young. And so there's stuff like that you can talk to them about. But, you know, human stuff that you would talk to them, whether this team was winning or losing. But, as far as, like, positive stuff, it's really tough to find positive stuff right now to write about.
No, I get you. And by the way, that was one of them. Isaiah actually had a nice little game the last outing. And so I'm actually looking for. See, to me, I'm having fun with this season because I'm a draft Nick. I love the fact that they tore it all the way down to rebuild this whole thing. So now I'm excited to watch the young guys that are developing, then whatever draft comes in. So to me, I'm going to enjoy this process. I'm all for this process of the way they've torn this down. I don't look at it like tanking. I think people don't understand the definition of tanking. Tanking is the Miami Marlins. Tanking is when you don't try to win year in and year out. This is a team that just reset their entire franchise. That's what they have to do. In a regular corporation, you get to fire this manager, 16 assistant managers, 4 corporate managers, and then get those salaries to rehire everybody. In football, you can't do that. You got to take a salary cap hit. You got to reset. You got to wait a whole year to get that money back again. That's what they're going to do. That's the way they're doing things. It's different than corporate America, you can replace somebody with the same salary you just got rid of them. In football, you can't. Unfortunately, there are penalties. So for me, I enjoy this process, Perk. I think this is the right way to tear it all down, to rebuild it from scratch and build it in your vision instead of trying to implement your vision in the way of overcoming hurdle after hurdle after hurdle and trying to fix the problem. This is fixing the problem in one fell swoop.
Yeah, this is, look, the only problem that I've had with this whole thing, I was on board with everything they were doing up until Tunsil and Fitzpatrick, and we talked about that. I understand the reasons for it. We don't need to get bogged down in that.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not against it, you know, philosophically at all, and they're cleaning up their salary cap. You know, I think they're still paying Ndamukong too. I think he's part of their dead money.
Yes.
So, or not still paying him, but he's part of their dead money. But, yeah, so I don't have a big problem with that. You know, and when you talk about the process and watching these guys improve, I agree with you there, too. Like, yeah, is Isaiah Prince going to be a player? Is Eater? Is Wilkins going to be a player? Were they smart to take Wilkins instead of Dwayne Haskins? All of that kind of stuff. The only deal is, and, you know, take this for what it's worth, everybody is off to a slow start. And so that's kind of, you know, Wilkins and Dieter, and I guess Preston Williams is not off to a slow start. But, yeah, it's hard to judge right now. I think, you know, look, some of these guys are going to end up having a good year. You know, some of these guys that they acquired, some of these guys that they drafted, it's just hard to tell right now because nobody has gotten off to a hot four-game start or even played well for three out of these first four games. But I agree with you 100%. This season is all about player development. That's what this season is about. And even if, you know, whatever, even if 30 of these guys aren't on the team for the next 2 years, that's okay. It's really, who did you find?
Right.
Because you're really not trying to win this year. You're taking a look at players. You're taking a look at really even coaches, right? I mean, Pat Flaherty didn't make it very far.
It's an evaluation. It's an evaluation.
Correct.
Yeah, you're finding out which one of these guys are foundational pieces from here on out. That's all you're trying to do. That's why it's not tanking, because, see, people think they can win this week. So if they're trying to win, clearly they're not tanking. If they're trying to coach players up from week to week and trying to find the right combinations and the right people to start, then they're not tanking. So if you're coaching and trying to improve your players, you're clearly not tanking. You're working with what you have, and unfortunately you don't have a lot. That's why you run out of gas in the second half, because you just don't have the talent.
I think, yes, that's true. That's true. I think the tank job was done before the season. I think what I always say is the tank job was done by the front office and in the offseason, right? That was getting rid of Tannehill and Cam Wake and Robert Quinn and all those guys. Once you got into the season, you're trying to win. You're trying to coach these guys up. You're game planning. You're not just going out there on a Thursday and telling the guys to, you know, go to the beach. We're not going to practice today. You're coaching these guys up hard because everybody's job is on the line. But I think the tank job was, look, you're taking a bunch of guys who, let's face it, 30 or 35 of these guys are not NFL caliber. And GM Chris Greer knew it, and Marvin Allen knew it, and Reggie McKenzie knew it, and Steve Ross knew it. But they're willing to accept that. But yeah, there was a tank job going, but the second they stepped on the field for training camp, the tank job stopped, and you're coaching them up, and you're trying to win games. You just don't have enough talent to win games, and that's why you've been shut out 81-0 in the second half. That has zero to do with halftime adjustments. Look, Joe Philbin's teams, quite often, they were some of the top-scoring third-quarter teams in the NFL. That doesn't mean Joe was a great coach or Joe made great halftime adjustments. That's just the way it was. This team just does not have the talent to win. They are coaching them hard. The guys are practicing hard. But that, to me, that's where that tank job becomes apparent. You didn't give yourself NFL-caliber players, and we know why, because you're trying to clean up the salary cap and all that kind of stuff.
You cannot get NFL. Once you cleared out all those guys, you had the cap issues that you could not replace them because the system does not allow you, like real life allows you to cut this CEO, hire another one for the same salary. You can do that in real life. That's why to you guys, some of you guys, you call it tanking. I call it what they've needed for many years. I had a term on radio for many years for the Dolphins, what they needed to do. It was two words. It starts with an O, and the other word starts with an E. For many years, I said they needed an organizational enema. That's exactly what they did. That's what they needed.
No,
This is what it they is. Need. They needed to clear out all the bad salaries. I thought that was genius and gutsy on his part because he was going to take heat, but at the same time, he was going to take a huge cap hit in just 1 year and then turn it around. That way he had all that cap space. To me, that's the right thing to do. What are you going to do? Cut one or two guys every year and then slowly but surely try to turn it around? That's it. That's a slow kill that is almost impossible. This way is a way that you can turn it around quickly, load up with a bunch of picks, and if you hit on them, man, you can be good really quickly here. In 3-4 years, you could be covering a playoff team, Perk.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. I think that's very possible that I'm doing that. And as a matter of fact, I probably should be covering a playoff team in 3 or 4 years.
Yes, you will.
Given the draft picks and given the money. Look, you can call it what you want, whether you never use the term tank and you just call it a rebuild, or whether you call it a tank/rebuild or whatever. But they're getting their house in order, and they prepare themselves to do it in relatively quick fashion. And look, we knew that they knew that they were not going to win this year, because that was part of the explanation that Steve Ross gave with Adam Gase's firing, that Adam Gase wants to win now. And whatever you want to say about Adam Gase, I thought that showed that Steve Ross knew that this was going to be a sacrificial season, that you had to, you've got to lose in order to win again. And that's whatever you want to, if you want to use the tank word or the rebuild word or whatever, you had to lose in order to win again. And that's what we're seeing.
By the way, are you negotiating with the Athletic to cover the draft in Vegas, or are you stuck in Davie with sandwiches?
I'm stuck in Davie. They go, hey, I, you know, I follow you on Twitter. I know you're organizing that big Vegas party,
baby.
Man.
Oh, we got.
I wish
we,
I could
we
be
got,
out there, but you know,
we got a bar, dude.
Here,
dude, we
from,
got a
Chris
bar.
Greer to Marvin Allen to Brian Flores. So I'm going to be here in stuck in Davie with sandwiches. They go.
I'll be in Vegas, baby, with a couple hundred Dolphin fans in a bar that we are going to be dominating. It's a Dolphin bar called Tommy Rockers, and so we're gonna do audio and video out there. We got a hotel we're setting up with a couple hundred rooms that Dolphin fans are signing up for. We are gonna own it. I already checked it out. Foreigner's already out there. We're gonna see Foreigner on the Tuesday night before the draft starts. So I've already got a concert planned out, because they don't have a lot of concerts set up yet from now to April. But I do know Foreigner's there, so I'll be having a little fun with that, or shall I say Bill will be having fun with that, of course.
Yes,
so,
sir.
So, yeah, we got the Vegas trip set up already as it is. All right, so this week, what are you doing in the Athletic? Are you picking the boys to win, or are you picking them to lose this week? How you going? Because Washington clearly has more talent. Okay, I mean, that there's no doubt in my mind. They actually have a nice defense, man. I like their defense. They got some talent on that defense, but they're unorganized. We'll see if Bill Callahan calls them the dumbest team in America, like he did to his Raiders years ago. What do you think happens on Sunday?
Boy, Bigo, I think it's going to be a close game. We don't make official picks. I picked the Dolphins to cover against the Chargers, and they didn't do it. I think I would probably pick the Dolphins to win this week, because I don't trust Washington on the road, and that's the big thing. Now, look, we know that Callahan loves to run that ball, right? So they're going to get a steady dose of the run. The Dolphins struggle to stop the run, so you know, if Adrian Peterson or whoever gets hot running that ball, the Dolphins are going to have a hard time. But I think, you know, if I had to make a pick, and I know it's late in the week, it's Thursday, I'll ride with the Dolphins. I'll just say it. I'm riding with the Dolphins this week. And Dolphins fans, don't get mad at me. Make whatever you want to make out of it. But I'm going to ride with the Dolphins this week to get a narrow victory.
And here's what I want to – here's the test also, because I'm comparing. One, in Davie, this coaching staff with the least amount of talent in the league has gotten better every single week. Would you argue that? No, right? You can't argue that, right?
No. Yeah, they've improved. They have definitely improved.
Right, because offense and defense didn't show up the first 2 weeks. The third week, the defense showed up into the third quarter against Dallas. The fourth week, the offense and defense showed up for an entire half. So that's progress in my eyes. They're getting a little better, right? So, and I've watched Manny Diaz screw it up twice with 2 weeks to go to prepare for a team. He has come out unready for his team, and his team has gotten worse and worse and worse as the season's gone on. I want to see what Flores does with 2 weeks of preparation for a Redskins team that is struggling. I'm really intrigued to see how they handle this, because if it goes the way the last 4 weeks have gone, we should actually see a half-decent outing this week from the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, I think for the Dolphins to win, the Dolphins' talent gap there's such a big talent gap between, you know, them and the next least talented team in the NFL that it's going to be tough for them. I think the best way for them to win is to have a couple of guys get really hot, and I don't care what position, whether it's Xavien Howard and Josh Rosen or whoever, you know, Charles Harris, who, you know, he'll never get hot, but you know what I'm saying. If they can get a couple of guys to get hot and everybody else can do their job, then I think that's the best formula. I just don't think that it's realistic for the Dolphins, for anybody to think, the Dolphins, you know, maybe they could score 30 points this week, or maybe they could score 4 touchdowns. They don't have the skill. They probably at this point need to win a low scoring game, and somebody, whether somebody rushes for 150 yards or has 3 interceptions or 3 sacks or goes for 4 touchdowns, or, you know, somebody grades out at 100%, you know, at left tackle or whatever. I think they would. It would be more of an individual led victory than a team led victory. But whatever, as long as you see some signs of improvement, both from the players and from the coaches, you will take it. Right? That's what I think.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. All right, Perk, we'll wrap it up with this. Chris Perkins from The Athletic covers the Dolphins on a daily basis. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Perk. I believe this will be successful 3-4 years from now. I love what Chris Greer did. I think he's got guts, plus adding McKenzie and Allen to the scouting staff. I really think these guys are going to hit a lot of picks down the line here, and the Dolphins are going to turn things around. How many teams do you think in the next 4 years try to do what the Dolphins are doing right now?
I think it's going to depend on how successful Cleveland and Miami are at doing this, because they're both kind of trying to do the same thing. I think Cleveland probably accelerated the process a little bit more by trading for OBJ and Olivier Vernon and then trading for Jarvis Landry. But from the standpoint of where, you know, Cleveland took Baker Mayfield and Myles Garrett, you know, I think that these somewhere in between, if both of these teams are reasonably successful, you'll see some teams emulate this model. But the one issue that I will take with you on the Dolphins is the length of time, 3 or 4 years. Steve Ross's stated goal is to win a Super Bowl and sustain winning. 3 or 4 years, that's too soon. Nobody's going to literally hold him to that. But
I don't think Super Bowl, by the way, for the record. Wait, Perk, for the record, 3-4 years, I think, is playoffs, not Super Bowl. I think they get back to respectability in 3 to 4 years from now. That's what I think.
And that's exactly what I was alluding to right there. You know, it depends on what you call, success of the rebuild, because if all you do is get to the playoffs and you never threaten to get to a Super Bowl, I don't know how successful that really makes this whole process, but you know, we'll see. We'll see, because it's like if Cleveland never gets to a Super Bowl, is their rebuild successful? If they go to the playoffs 3 straight years and, you know, they make 1 AFC championship game, is that success?
Whoa, Perk. You are talking about the Browns. If they make the playoffs for 3 straight years and make it to an AFC championship game, my man, this is a team that's had nothing to, they look like the guy from, History of the World Part 1. I got nothing for sale. If they make it to the playoffs, that would be an incredible accomplishment for the Browns. Yeah, come on, okay, man.
It would, but is that success? Is that worth going 1-1? What did they go, 1-31?
You have changed your culture. You're winning now. You're in the playoffs, Perk. You have changed. If you've gone to the playoffs several times, now if you tell me once and then you never go back again and it was a pure aberration, then I'm with you. But the way you said it, multiple playoffs and an AFC championship game, that then you have changed your culture on. It doesn't mean that you have to win the Super Bowl. Well, then you got to get the right coach in order to get you the Super Bowl. But if you're making the playoffs every year, then that means you've provided whatever coaching staff you have enough talent, at least.
Yeah, well, I see that, and that's what I say. It's in the eye of the beholder. I mean, I don't know that anybody would say that Cincinnati was successful, right, with five straight playoff appearances and no playoff victory. But, it's a sliding scale. It depends on, and again, I'm not going to hold Steve Ross to we must win a Super Bowl, but I think the sustained winning, and you have to come up with your definition of sustained winning, but
I got an example for you. I got an example for you. I got it. Wait a minute.
Basically zero, and so we'll see, Big O. We'll see. To me, it's what is your end game, and how many years do you think it's going to take you to get there? And to me, that will be the ultimate judge of whether this was successful and whether other teams will feel it's worth emulating.
Well, listen, here's the example I would give you. If the Browns are making the playoffs, like you said, a couple years in a row in an AFC championship game, then it's been very successful because it's completely different than what you were, that you never made the playoffs and you were always a disaster. At least you're winning and you're in the playoffs. Here's the polar opposite of it in the same kind of fashion. The Miami Heat. People are all excited about Jimmy Butler. And I'm like, okay, it's nice, but you're a 7 or 8 seed. You're Pat Riley. You're championship and parade down Biscayne. You have set a standard of championships. Being a 7 or 8 seed, I'm not impressed. It's nice. The Heat will be more entertaining this year. It's all well and good, but it's still beneath you because you're the Miami Heat. For the Browns, making the playoffs multiple times, that's a hell of an accomplishment. For the Miami Heat, making the playoffs as a 7 or 8 seed, I'm not impressed. Why? Because you've given me more. You have set a higher standard. So I look at the Browns differently than I would look at the Heat with the same kind of accomplishments.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. Look, I think that ultimately you have to define kind of what is your goal here. When can you say that we have come close to crossing the finish line or have crossed the finish line like that? Success is different things to different people, and so, look, if you're a Dolphins fan, come up with your definition of success for this rebuild over a stretch of 3 or 4 years. What do you want to see from this team, whether it's get to a Super Bowl or 2 AFC championship games in a 4-year span or whatever? I think you've got to define success and how long it's going to take, and that's kind of how you judge whether this thing is successful and whether other teams will emulate it. Because, look, if you eventually win a Super Bowl, but it takes you 8 years and you aren't even using that first wave of players, I don't know if that's worth emulating, right? So that's what I mean. You've got to define your end game and then, how long it takes you to get there. Obviously, if you win a Super Bowl in 5 years, then yes, you're going to see teams, copy your model. But if all you do is get to a couple of wild card playoff games and you never win one, I don't think you'll see anybody tear it down to this extreme to build it back up.
You got it. All right, follow him on Twitter at Chris Perk. Check out that story on Josh Rosen he wrote. And, of course, catch his terrific work at The Athletic. It's a joke. You can subscribe to it every single month and get the coverage from all your teams locally and nationally for like $4, which is just ridiculous. Perk, as always, you're a stud. Thank you for taking some time, my man. I appreciate it.
Dude, anytime, Big O. You know I enjoy what you do, man. Take care.
Thank you, my brother. You're the best. Appreciate it. There you go. Chris Perkins. Good stuff there. All right, let's do this. Let's take about a 90-second break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Craig Mish And we'll get ready to wrap it up here on the program from the Miami-Dade Animal Services in Doral. We'll switch over to baseball. We'll talk some doggies. We'll have some fun. Remember, come on down to 3599 Northwest 79th Avenue to the Pet Adoption and Protection Center here in Doral. All right. And on Twitter at Adopt Miami Pets. We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk to Craig Mish and more right here on the Big O Show. Rock and roll. All right, we take you here, final, I don't know, few minutes of the program. We're going to talk a little baseball because baseball has been very, very good to me with Craig Mish. Of course, we love doing it, as always, with Craig Mish. He is the man. Let's bring him aboard. Follow him on Twitter at Craig Mish. Mishmeister, how you doing, my friend? Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on, Mishmeister. We're still trying to bring you up here. Just want to make sure. Now, do we have you?
I am here.
There we go. We got you now. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So you were able to drop off the kids? We gave you enough time, or what's the deal?
Oh, they're going to listen to this interview with the great Orlando Altigary.
And by the way, you can catch him on Fantasy Radio, FNTSY Radio on Twitter from noon to 2 every single day. So make sure you download the app and listen to my man Craig Mish, as always, and follow him on Twitter for some breaking news, as always. Great insight. And, you know, Mishmeister, a lot of people are taking their shots at Clayton Kershaw today. I just, as a guy that's been in the locker room, as a guy that's had to ask all those questions in the worst moments, I got to tell you, all I did was just gain way more respect for Clayton Kershaw. The way he handled it, the way he approached it, the way he doused the fire and said, hey, it's on me, man. It's I get what you guys are going to talk about, and everything you're going to talk about me in the postseason is true. I really admired the man yesterday, and it makes me now root more for him than ever to get over this postseason hurdle of his.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point, because Orlando, and being in the media for 30 years or more, like you have.
No, it's 30. Don't go more. Okay, 30. All right? Okay. Don't make me older than I am.
All right. I wasn't exactly sure. I thought 30 sounded good. So, you know, for you and me, and for people who have been hosts, but we came from backgrounds of having to ask those questions, I think that's a really good assessment. And I think it's really unfair, because a lot of people who are, you know, involved in now, like the new Hot Take Radio, just they've never had that experience. And it's really easy to rip a player. It's really easy to come down on a player without having to deal with them in person. And so I think that's the first point that needs to be made, and I think it's an astute one by you. The other point that I would make is that although the decision-making process may not have been clean by Dave Roberts throughout that game, including
Joe Kelly
in the game, is
Joe Kelly?
And they could have potentially even pulled Kershaw after the first home run.
But yeah, that too. I talked about that here on the show too. They could have pulled him after the first home run, and they did.
Right, but let's also be clear: in the National League, he gave up two home runs to two players who were probably in the top 10 in terms of hitters in the entire National League. It's not like he gave up home runs to guys who weren't any good. I mean, Anthony Rendon is an MVP candidate. Juan Soto is one of the best players in all of Major League Baseball, and he's only 20. And Kershaw is not the Kershaw that he was in the past. And, of course, he's got that history of the postseason for sure, but he got beat by two great players there. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I woke up this morning thinking, my gosh, Rendon and Soto are amazing, and Washington may have a chance to win the whole thing. And, of course, the narrative is always going to be the tear down, because people like to see train wrecks. But, look, Kershaw's career is a Hall of Fame career any way you slice it, but there's no doubt he just hasn't performed in the postseason, and that's going to be what everyone's focused on.
All right, so the Roberts thing, how much do we lay it on him for not pulling Kershaw after the first home run? How about Kelly? I don't know if I would have put Kelly in that situation either. I don't think that was a good call either.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, they have Kenley Jansen. I don't know really why he wasn't used until the game was out of hand. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me either. The team did win 106 games, and they were within five innings of basically advancing again. So I'm sure he'll take some heat for it, and perhaps he'll be on the hot seat next year. But I would be hard-pressed to let go of a guy that that has done such a good job for that organization. And I've known Dave through the years personally. A lot of the decisions are being made upstairs. He's one of those managers that gets a lineup, not every day, but I'm sure a lot of the days, from the front office, from the analytics staff, and they have these scenarios that they point to that they've predetermined no matter what, this is what they're going to do. And I think that's exactly the way that it played out last night. So as much of it that goes on Roberts has to go on the front office.
Does the Kelly thing go with analytics or goes against the analytics? And does the Kershaw thing go with analytics or does it go against analytics? I'm not sure.
Well, they decide. I mean, not every team does it this way, but the Dodgers for sure do it this way, where they determine before the game, if we're in this scenario, you know, and the analytics department will sit down with Roberts and they'll sit down with Friedman and the general manager. They'll all like have a game plan going in saying, here's what we want to do if this spot happens. And, you know, some managers manage on feel and some manage based on upstairs. And he's one of those guys that's upstairs. I got news for you, Orlando. Aaron Boone is the same way with the New York Yankees. A lot of their
he's a big analytics
guy. Are predetermined. And I mean, I don't know that Boone is an analytics guy. That team is driven by analytics. And so each team handles certainly things differently, but these scenarios are predetermined a lot of the time. And the manager, yes, while he is making the final decision, they have a playbook, basically like the NFL does. Like they have their first 20 plays of the game or whatever, first 8 plays of the game. Baseball has that same thing, too. Here's what we do in every scenario, and that's exactly what happened.
And listen, when we talk about that matchup, that's the other thing. Those are the two teams that probably are the biggest underachievers in the National League the last 10 years. So whoever was going to lose that series was also going to have to carry that same burden, because the Nationals and the Dodgers, that's the one thing. They've spent a lot of money or they have a lot of talent and they have come up short over and over and over again. That's the brutal part about that series, that one of those two was going to still carry that torch.
Well, the good news for Washington was they at least won that wild card game.
Right.
So they came back and beat Milwaukee. So the monkey was off their back a little bit, but there were still a lot of people who felt like that wasn't enough. And for L.A., it's a huge disappointment. I think anything less than at least getting to the World Series would have been a disappointment. But remember, Orlando, they took the Houston 7 games 2 years ago, and then, of course, they lost to the Red Sox last year in the World Series. So, yeah, it's a disappointing season. And a lot of it's going to hang on Kershaw, which is, you know, again, really, really unfortunate. But in this day and age that we live in, man, we just want that instant rip and that instant gratification. And there's no doubt that's what's happening today.
Rays, Astros, who ends up playing the Yankees?
Well, if it's not the Astros, then this would be the wackiest baseball postseason that we've seen ever. I mean, this is the last chance for this postseason to be somewhat normal, because the games have obviously been incredible, and the games that were not incredible have been so lopsided that you can't even believe what's going on. So, I mean, look, how could I not take the best pitcher in baseball this year against at home in a Game 5 scenario? I don't know how Gerrit Cole will react to that. I guess that's out there, and that's up for interpretation, but I would have to take Cole. And one scenario that could play itself out is Charlie Morton, who 2 years ago for the Astros came in the, I believe it was the 5th inning, and then closed out the game for the Astros. He's now on Tampa. And what if Tampa holds a 2-1 lead, Orlando, in the 4th or 5th inning? Are they bringing in Morton to finish the game again? And that could happen. So I'll take Houston here. But I got to tell you, I've seen some things this baseball postseason that I did not expect at all.
Yeah, and listen, kudos to the Rays front office, man. I mean, those guys can scout, dude. They can find some talent because they don't have the money that everybody else has. And yet somehow or another, they're right here hanging with the big boys. I mean, hats off to them.
Yeah, and even though Oakland lost to Tampa, hats off to them too. Yeah. No one ever expects them to compete, and every year they win 85-90 games, and they did it again this year. They just fell short in that playoff game. But the thing with the Rays is that these teams that do it with analytics and small payrolls and a lot of platooning, the knock on them is that they're not built for these 5- and 7-game series. And so Tampa Bay really has a chance tonight to prove that wrong because, as you know, they use, you know, Tampa Bay and some of the other teams in the big leagues now, they use the openers. A guy will come in, pitch an inning, and then someone else pitches two and three.
Right.
And Milwaukee even did that in the postseason, too, in their wild card game, and they did it at the end of this season when their pitching fell short. So Tampa Bay winning this series would break the mold because Oakland uses openers as well, but there hasn't been a team that's gotten to this point that has gotten this far with that strategy. And they may need to employ it for the entire postseason, which would be a complete change in the way that we view things, for sure.
What'd you think of the Cards-Braves series after the Cards almost scored two touchdowns yesterday?
Yeah, that was unexpected. Now, I did pick the Cardinals and bet on the Cardinals to win the World Series last December in Vegas when I was there for the winter meeting. So I thought St. Louis had a really good shot, because their kid Flaherty is somebody who I loved a lot going into the year. He disappointed in April and May. And then he came on from that point on. He was the best pitcher in baseball from June on. And they got Goldschmidt, Orlando. So obviously at that point, I'm like, okay, they have Ozuna, they have Goldschmidt, they have Carpenter. I'm taking the Cardinals. But that being said, I did not expect them clearly to win 13-1. You never would expect that. It's really unfortunate. Like, we here in South Florida have rightfully so had a hard time with our sports the last, 8 to 10 years probably or more.
Around.
That's true. But there's no city that's had to endure this kind of stuff like Atlanta. Orlando just hasn't been, man. Like, it's just one disappointment after the next. The Hawks always falling in their decision games, and then getting beat by teams that were, you know, in the NBA seated lower than them. And then you had, their hockey team, which was a debacle, ended up being a debacle. You had the Falcons losing in the Super Bowl, being up 28-3. Falcons are always disappointing. And then the Braves went to all those World Series without winning. With the exception of winning one of them,
and don't forget they've lost.
Have to struggle with this,
and they've lost two hockey teams.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It was a debacle. So,
Hold on a second.
The Braves will be back. They have Acuna.
Well, they do have an MLS team that's pretty damn good, bro. At least they got that. They can hang their hats on that because Atlanta's pretty damn good.
Well, there you go. I wasn't aware. That's what we have you for.
It's a beautiful thing. All right. Hey, tell them about Fantasy Radio so folks can check you out.
Yeah, the app is FNTSY Radio, and the FantasySportsNetwork.com is the website. And so, like you, I've really embraced being in podcast form and being involved in the digital age. And the show is on every day from 12 to 2 Eastern. And on my Twitter, you can find that there. And then every week I do a podcast on the Miami Marlins called Swings and Misses. Ironically, this is the first week since January that we didn't do a podcast. This is the first week we just decided to start going bi-weekly now that the baseball season is over. And although there was some news today, there really just isn't a lot of news in general. But I'll be back doing it every week once we get hot into the winter meetings and the hot stove. And those are the primary ways that you can catch me on the internet.
When are they going to open up their wallets over there in Miami?
Well, we have to see what that TV contract is going to look like. I would guess that there'll be 2 or 3 players that you've actually heard of that they'll sign that are not close to retiring this year. So that will be a step in the right direction. But beyond that, they have 2 players this year, Orlando, who are free agents. One is Prado, who they probably won't bring back.
Yeah, no, please.
He made $18 million. And then Starlin Castro made about $11 or $12 million. So I would expect them to reinvest maybe $15-20 million in their payroll based on what they've lost there. But until they get a new TV deal, which won't come in until after next year, I would expect a very limited increase. I wouldn't even think there would be an increase in payroll, but I do think they will reinvest some of that money. And maybe they'll find an opportunity with a player who is out there that you don't expect to be gone. And I'm not saying Mookie Betts is that guy, but, like, for example, the Red Sox are talking about maybe moving Mookie Betts or JD Martinez. Maybe there is some other team that decides that they're going to, you know, kind of start over, and Miami's getting closer at least to competing. Maybe that's the route that they go. But it's so undetermined right now, and the free agent pool is not like it has been in past years. A lot of the kids signed those long-term deals. Acuna's already signed forever. So is Ozzie Albies. So it'll be slim pickings, but my guess is that they'll upgrade at least very slightly, at the very least, going into next year.
Follow him on Twitter at Craig Mish for breaking news. And, of course, anything new on the Marlins, check out the podcast Swings and Mishes, all Marlins. And, of course, Fantasy Radio. Mishmeister, as always, you're the best. Thank you for taking some time.
No problem. Congratulations on the podcast and the video and all the great things that you're doing. I really think you found your niche there. Congrats.
Thank you, my brother. Appreciate it. It has been absolutely awesome. You are the man. I appreciate that. Very kind.
All right. Have a good one.
You got it, baby. Be good. There you go. Craig Mish, man. And this whole podcasting thing has been just a blessing. And the response from you guys has been awesome. And I love how everybody's spreading the word. And we're gaining more and more traction every single day. And we're visiting all kinds of great people, our sponsors. And we're out here with Flora at Miami-Dade Animal Services in Doral, by the way, at 3599 Northwest 79th Avenue. This is a place that takes in about 75 to 80 animals a day. Stray animals, owners surrendering them, confiscation from hoarding, puppy mills, etc. All kinds of different situations. Currently, they're caring for more than 600 dogs and cats. And of course, it's a no-kill facility, which is really important. Wait a minute. Hold on. Go ahead, Flora.
We're so proud of that fact. You know, it took us, we've been a no-kill for many years now.
I would not be here if you weren't a no-kill.
I wouldn't be working here.
Yeah.
If that was not the case. That was one of the first questions that I asked them.
Yes.
When they turned the questions over to me, you know, I was like, you got to tell me that you're a no-kill shelter, because if you are, I can't work for you.
Right.
You know, and we want the community to know that. It's really important that they realize that the only reasons that we would ever euthanize a pet that comes to us is if they're sick.
Suffering. Yeah.
If they're suffering and there's nothing that we can do for them.
Of course.
Because if there is anything that we can possibly do for them, we will do it for them. And we go out to the community and look for community partners and veterinaries and special care places that will actually give the care that is necessary for that pet rather than to euthanize them.
Right.
Right? Or if they're so aggressive, just gotten to the point where they have been through so much in life and have been so conditioned in life that they are actually a threat to the human beings that are trying to care for them. And so we cannot trade the safety of our employees and our staff for the life of
a
pet, unfortunately.
That's
those are the only reasons and the conditions under which we are going to unfortunately have to euthanize an animal. But other than that, we save as many lives as we possibly can. And we have over 30,000 animals that come through our doors every year.
Wow.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's enormous. That's a huge number. Can I have Sweet Pea, by the way?
So oh, you can have Sweet
while,
Pea.
While we're having the conversation, because I can't get enough of doggies. Well, Sweet Pea's got the cable. There we go. There's Sweet Pea.
Sweet Pea is so awesome.
So he is awesome. He's been so good today. A couple of little, you know, little moments that he had today, but he is awesome. He's a complete cuddle bunny when he wants to be. And he is a Papillon mix. He came to us as a surrender. So a lot of the times pet owners just can't keep them for whatever reason. They're moving.
That's
what I say. But unfortunately, he did come to us as a surrender. And we kept his original name. He's 11 months old right now. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be at our Mega.
Ooh, okay.
Event. So let's talk about Mega.
That's right behind me.
Yeah, the Matchathon.
The Matchathon. So, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. So it's really important. We wanted to focus this year on the fact that we have so many animals here that you can find your perfect match. So if you're athletic and you want to go jogging with your dog, guess what? We've got dogs that are big and have long legs and can run right beside you, right? If you're a couch potato and you just like to sit there and watch the dolphins all the time, God bless you, first of all, because it's painful to watch them lose every week.
Yes.
But the good news is that if you have a pet sitting there next to you, you can relieve some of that stress that's building up by just
petting them,
right?
Well, I said that a little while ago. I just think they are stress relievers.
Absolutely. And actually,
Sweet Pea gives me 10,000 kisses.
Absolutely. And so there's actually been research that's been done out there that says that they actually do improve your mood.
Oh,
your
yeah.
endorphins actually do go up scientifically. They've proven this. That pets actually improve your mood. If you're depressed or feeling lonely and just need companionship, come get a pet from us at the Matchathon. Guaranteed, we're going to have all sizes, all different breed mixes. We're going to have big, small, old, young, puppies, kittens, cats, you name it. We're going to have them there, and we want you to come out. It starts at 11:59 p.m. on the 18th, Friday the 18th, and will run for an entire 24 hours.
Nice.
So, adopters, you've got 24 hours to come by. We will be bringing out animals as needed, and we hope to get at least 300.
I just met him, and look.
How can you not fall in love with that thing?
I know.
He is just adorable. And so, you know, you come by, and you're bound to find your perfect match out there, yeah. You know? And we want to make sure.
Somebody adopt Sweet Pea, please. Come on out here. Look at this dog. Look at this dog. Look how
precious.
Cool this dog is.
Yeah. Been hanging out with us all day, and has been the coolest.
And awesome.
He's super mellow. He has his little bouts of energy every once in a while because he's a puppy. He's
just
still a puppy.
Let us know he's here.
Although I got to tell you, my girl Maiden, she's a big dog, and in some of the posts that you'll see on Twitter and Facebook, you'll see I put different pictures of dogs. Those are my dogs that I'm putting there. By the way, but she's almost three and she's still a puppy.
Oh, they.
She still has the energy, which I always look at her like, are you ever going to mellow out? Because she is like a bundle of energy, you know, but 70 pounds in a bundle of energy is a lot of weight to be throwing around, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But she's so cool, you know what I mean? I love it, but dogs are the best.
They are the best. And they'll do everything that you ask that of them, and they'll love you unconditionally. I tell my mother that the day that a dog greets me the way my dogs do at my door every day when I come home.
Oh, you mean
home,
a human greets you like a dog, yeah. But
yes, thank you. That a human being does is the day that I'm going to get married.
Right,
because otherwise,
you won't find
happening.
It.
No.
You won't find it. You won't find it. There's not. You won't find it because, unfortunately, those of us that have dogs, you know what I'm talking about. They're usually better than humans. And so it's just the way it is. Look
you
at this.
Get that
Look at this.
Unconditional love and trust and companionship from an animal that you just don't get from anybody else. And so, again, just come out and visit us the 18th through the 19th, 24 hours. We're going to have all these dogs out there, all sizes, young and old, cats as well, and kittens. So just come out there. We're going to have the festivities out there. The heat is going to be out there. So we're going to have some of the dancers out there, the heat dancers. We're going to have Bernie come out and visit us.
I like it.
Some giveaways there. We're going to have music all playing along.
You're biting me so hard.
Some entertainment that's going to come through. They're nibbles. We're going to have entertainment come through. We are going to have a beer garden.
My watch. You can't buy my watch. Huh?
A beer garden.
Ooh,
all
a beer garden.
That gets your attention, right?
Yes, beer garden.
So we're going to have a beer garden out there.
CSVP, a beer garden.
And we're going to have Red Bull, I think, is going to come out and do some free samples as well. So it's just going to be just a festival environment where we're hoping to find, you know, as many of our furry friends, a forever loving, caring family that they can go to and have a quality life.
Flora, explain to folks how easy it is to adopt, because maybe some people might think this is a big old process and all of that. It's not that difficult, and you can have this much fun right here. See?
Yeah, that much love.
See, he's nibbling. He doesn't hurt me at all. See, he's just having fun.
So you fill out a couple pieces of paper for the older pets. So if they are older than 4 months, it's a tag fee. So all the adoption fees are going to be waived at the event for the 24 hours.
Wow.
You only are responsible for the tag, which is going to be a $30 fee.
I don't know if I add a fifth or sixth dog to the house.
Hey.
How many do you have at home?
I only have two.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's not only.
Yes.
Two's a load.
I want to make sure that I have enough room
don't
to
say
foster
two, don't
the
Asian only,
dog as well.
Don't say only. Two's a load, okay?
Well, I have a Rottweiler.
Ooh, nice.
Mix
I love,
at the house right now, and she's only 10 months old. I just got her.
They're so good. They're so good.
She is so mellow and loving.
Yeah.
And she allows this one to come and nibble it behind her hind legs and her tail all the time and just kind of turns around annoyed and aggravated. But
this
plays
one loves
with him
nibbling on my fingers, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. And So I've got a couple at home, and I welcome the community to kind of come out and see who they can welcome into their home because they are just amazing, amazing animals.
There you go. Sweet Pea. Sweet Pea looking for a home. There you go. And oh, the other thing I was gonna ask you is, online, do they have a place that they can go to see the dogs? And maybe you have pictures of some of the dogs and things like that?
So, yes, if you go to our website at miamidade.gov, just look for Animal Services, we actually have links to all of our pictures of the dogs there. You can see who we have available. You're always welcome to come down beforehand, before the event. But at the event, like I said, we'll have the special fees, the prices that will be waived. For puppies, it's going to be $85. For cats and kittens, will be absolutely no charge.
Wow, cool.
To them. So, you know, we're just trying to make it easy for the community to come out, and it's not that complicated a process, and just allow them to be able to bring a new best friend into their home.
I love it. Flora, give them the information. I told them the address, 3599 Northwest 79th Avenue. Is there a phone number people can call if they've got some questions, some concerns, those kind of things?
Easy peasy. Call 311. They've got direct access to all of our information, and they will, you know, get you all the answers to your questions. You can always go to our website as well. Just go to miamidade.gov, and you'll be able to access our link there. And you can also, you know, just come out to Tropical Park, and we'll be there the 18th through the 19th. Sweet Pea's at home, so he's crawling all over the place.
Yes.
And we hope to see the community either at our center or, you know, at the event.
Mm-hmm.
Come out, find a new best friend, find your perfect match. You know, it doesn't matter how odd you think you are. We've got some oddballs here. How fancy and fierce you think you are. We
can't be any more odd than I am, so don't worry about it.
You know, and we've just got just about whatever you're looking for, we probably have it.
So, and by the way, we're going to be out here again on November 21st, and we'll do it from 10 a.m. to noon. So we'll be here a little earlier. And then the following month in December, we're going to be here on the 12th of December. And in January, we are going to be out here on January 9th. So those are some of the dates for us out here at Doral Animal Services, or the Miami-Dade Animal Services in Doral. And again, on Twitter, you can follow them at Adopt Miami Pets. So you can come out here and adopt a beautiful animal that needs a loving home. There's nothing wrong with that. And I promise you that if you do adopt a dog, your home is going to be way better. It's just going to be a much better environment. Everybody's going to be slightly happier because that doggy is in the house. Because really, when the doggy walks up to you, that's it. It changes your mood.
Changes your entire day.
I mean, you saw it right now. I don't know Sweet Pea at all. But all I had to do was hold Sweet Pea, and I'm in a great mood.
Doesn't matter how rough or busy your day has been, when you go home to your best friend,
that's right,
there is no better feeling, and it teaches you patience, it teaches you unconditional love, and it really just improves the quality of your life and theirs.
There you go. Flora, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for taking some time.
My pleasure. Thank
you for hosting us, because we're going to be doing a lot of things together.
Absolutely.
And we're going to be growing this, and we're going to be encouraging you guys monthly to be adopting some doggies and making your life a little better. But we thank all of you out there for tuning in. We thank Michelle Kaufman from the Miami Herald for joining us. We thank Chris Perkins from The Athletic for joining us. We thank Craig Mish from Swings and Mishes and Fantasy Radio for joining us, talking a little Marlins, talking a little Major League Baseball, all kinds of good stuff. We thank all the great people out here at Miami-Dade Animal Services for making it nice and easy for us to broadcast. Next time around, we're going to have a nice little studio and everything here at the Miami-Dade Animal Services, so we're looking forward to that next month, and you can come on by and join us for the broadcast, and hopefully you can adopt a doggy. And we thank all of you for tuning in, for downloading. Remember, you can reach out to us anytime on the accidentlawfirm.com text line at 786-322-1105. We'll see you tomorrow from Hialeah Park from 1 to 4 p.m. Have a great one out there. Oh,